This is Wells Fargo Bank v. Yunnan Properties. Mr. Landis.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'd like to organize my comments to you today in four segments. I want to first summarize the principal argument that we're making. I want to summarize the relief that's being sought, tell you the basis for the request for relief from this court, and then conclude. This case involves the issue of attorney's fees awarded to my clients, the defendants, appellants, following Wells Fargo Bank's decision to voluntarily non-suit the case that it filed against my clients in the district court. We believe that the trial court erred when it awarded my clients only a small fraction of the fees that were sought when Wells moved to voluntarily dismiss this action without prejudice.
Was the district judge required to order payment of any fees?
No, sir. I think this was all discretionary. I think right. That he could condition it or not condition the voluntary dismissal of the case.
So if he would not have been abusing his discretion in denying all fees, why aren't you just happy you got anything?
We are happy with what we did get, but it's not appropriate because there was a substantial amount of fees that were not awarded that relate to matters that cannot be used in any subsequent litigation between the parties. And that's the Cawley case. That's the principal issue.
Cawley doesn't say this has to be done.
No, sir.
Cawley says what the district judge may do.
Yes.
So, again, where's the abuse of discretion?
Well, I think that what Judge Koukouras did is he analyzed this awarding only fees that were specifically noted in timesheets that were directed to the issue of subject matter jurisdiction. So had he simply said, I'm not going to award any fees, end of story, I suppose that would be one thing. But what he did is he analyzed it by saying, I'm going to award fees, but he limited those fees to merely subject matter jurisdiction and timesheets that specifically identified those, and he excluded time on other matters that was not going to be usable in other litigation between the parties, specifically defense of lack of service of process.
Would the district judge, if we were to remand, be entitled to reconsider whether any fees should be awarded?
Well, if it's within his discretion to award fees, I suppose that would be something that could be considered. However, I think that when the district court has made the determination that fees are appropriate, I mean, this was a litigation that went on for a year brought by Wells Fargo Bank against two individuals and a corporation, and after nearly a year, a motion to dismiss was brought, pointing out that there was a basic lack of diversity jurisdiction in that Wells So it was a citizen of California, and the defendants are citizens of California, and that was and because of that, Judge Koukouras granted the motion to dismiss, but allowed Wells leave to amend, and they chose to voluntarily non-suit.
And so,
what if on remand, somebody pointed out that actually there was diversity jurisdiction here, that it shouldn't have been dismissed, and therefore it wouldn't have been appropriate to award any fees? The defendant is a citizen of South Dakota, as I understand it.
They make that assertion in the appellate papers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the motion to dismiss that we filed before Judge Koukouras gave strong evidence that it was a citizen of the state of California.
He may have been wrong about that.
Yes.
But also Wells Fargo's original papers didn't do a very good job of dealing with the issue. But if we were to agree with you and remand, it might be possible to point out that, in fact, it was an error to dismiss in the first place. in which case it would be hard to see why any fees would be awarded. And what is the point of this whole exercise then? Right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I would advise, first of all, advise the court that Wells has initiated new litigation on this subject in the state of California, so there's not going to be any further litigation.
What's the status of that?
The status of that is the case is pending in the Van Nuys courthouse in California. The defendants have been served. Most recently, the defendants moved to dismiss that action on the grounds of a provision dealing with exclusive jurisdiction of the litigation in the state of state or federal courts in Illinois. That motion was denied.
Have I got this right? Your guys got sued in Illinois, and you moved to dismiss for lack of jurisdiction and won. And then you get sued in California, and you say no, Illinois is the exclusive jurisdiction?
Yes, because the papers provide that Illinois is the exclusive jurisdiction for this matter. Or federal courts.
Did you tell Judge Koukouras about them?
About what?
Illinois being the exclusive jurisdiction?
Well, it was not an issue. Well, Illinois...
This starts to sound like judicial estoppel.
The papers provide that the state or federal courts in Illinois would have exclusive jurisdiction of this matter. However, the federal court in Illinois would only have jurisdiction if it's subject to the court's diversity or federal question jurisdiction.
Right, and a national banking association is deemed a citizen of the state where its certificate says. So you could... this is... Do the loan agreements in question here provide for payment of attorney's fees? Do you happen
to
remember?
I'm sure they do.
Is this helping to litigate venue all over the country multiple times?
Well, I think that this is appropriate. If you're talking about venue in California, yes, sir, because that's the documents that specifically provide for exclusive jurisdiction in Illinois. It's not just a forum selection. It's exclusive.
After you somehow misled the district judge into thinking he didn't have jurisdiction.
No, it was not at all misleading.
Now, your argument is that Wells Fargo should have sued in a state court in Illinois? That's your point.
Yes, sir. Yeah. When Wells chose to voluntarily dismiss, we anticipated that they would merely refile in state court in Illinois.
So I guess my concern is, you know, the district court looked at the length of the motion, at the, you know, the, it was, as I understand it, 8 to 10 pages. He gave $11,000 in fees, and the request was for $55,000. Seems like a pretty simple motion. And in terms of the hours, the court asked, you know, any additional hours, I mean, asked for the hours relating to that. And so I'm having a hard time trying to see why that's an abuse of discretion.
Well, I think that we think it's an abuse of discretion is because Judge Koukouras only counted fee entries that specifically stated something about subject matter jurisdiction, whereas he had not previously indicated that he would only award fees for that subject.
And did you file a motion to reconsider so you could point that out to him?
We did not, Your Honor.
Because that could have been helpful, might have changed the result. But that wasn't done.
We did not ask for reconsideration, no.
Did you stipulate that you would not never bring up an issue about service of process and the other ground that the judge wasn't sure would not arise again?
Could you state that again? I didn't follow you, Your Honor.
Did you stipulate that you would not raise these additional issues?
You mean in subsequent litigation, do you mean?
Yeah, with Wells Fargo. Yeah.
In subsequent litigation? Yes. Yes, there's been a stipulation that if the case is refiled in Illinois, there would be an acceptance of jurisdiction here and, in fact, a waiver of service of process.
Well, what about California?
That's the argument that was made in California.
Okay, so that was a later...
You've lost me now. I understand.
Maybe I misunderstood your question,
sir. If it's filed in Illinois, you won't argue service of process. But you will argue it in California.
In California, it's not a service of process issue, sir. It's an issue of the exclusive forum selection clause in the documents.
Can I ask a question about
please.
That? Just, I thought, is it Sherry Unin?
Yes, sir.
That she moved to dismiss the Illinois action for lack of personal jurisdiction?
As well as subject matter, yes.
Okay. So she's saying even though the agreement says exclusive jurisdiction in Illinois, there's no personal jurisdiction over her.
The situation with Ms. Sherry Unin is slightly different in that one, her contention includes a denial that she signed the guarantee in question.
Okay, so that seems to pose a problem. You guys seem to be trying to tie Wells Fargo just totally in knots, right? If she can be sued only in California and jurisdiction is exclusive in Illinois, how does that work?
We're not saying that she could only be sued in California.
Where else?
In the state court in Illinois.
But she says no personal jurisdiction in Illinois, right?
When this motion was brought, the motion to dismiss, she argued that there was no service of process on her and that she also didn't have minimum contacts. However, Your Honor, just following up on Judge Posner's question, in the state court in California, those arguments are all not being pursued at this point, and we've stated to the court in California that if the action is filed in is dismissed in California, filed in Illinois, she will be subject to jurisdiction and
okay.
no service.
She gets sued in Illinois and says no minimum contacts, no personal jurisdiction. Wells Fargo sues her in California, and she says, no, you have to sue me in Illinois. Have I got that right?
Well, the dismissal in federal court was primarily based upon
but she argued personal jurisdiction.
She
right?
also argued personal
and
jurisdiction.
And she wants fees for having made that argument, right?
She wants fees for arguing that there was no service of process on her.
But she doesn't want fees for the personal jurisdiction argument.
There was a representation by her counsel that those fees were not being sought for that argument.
Okay. Well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Landis. Ms. Hatch?
May it please the Court. I do want to clarify, first off, on the California litigation. Wells Fargo did argue that there was not an exclusive forum jurisdiction clause, and we did prevail on that argument. So it is pending. Still in California, though, we have been informed that we are facing an appeal on that issue as well now in California. But I think it's important.
Why did Wells Fargo ask for voluntary dismissal?
Well, Your Honor, I will be honest that I wasn't involved in the case at that time, but I have talked with prior counsel. And my understanding is that we believed that there was diversity jurisdiction based upon this Wells Fargo being a citizen of South Dakota because that's where its certificate is filed. However, we also recognize that there is some conflict between the circuits on that issue. And because it had been raised by the defendants in the action, and because there was also the personal jurisdiction argument raised by Sherry Unin, the decision was made that it might be more cost-effective just to forego having to do a drawn-out battle on diversity jurisdiction and face more appeals, more litigation, and just voluntarily dismiss it and go out to California where we knew we wouldn't have a personal jurisdiction argument and where we wouldn't have to face numerous more appeals with respect to the diversity issue.
Well, they had moved to dismiss. Unin had moved to dismiss in Illinois.
They moved to dismiss for lack of. Once the case was filed, it was litigated for several months, and then about 8 months in, they decided to file a motion to dismiss for lack of.
But Unin filed a motion to dismiss, didn't it?
Yes.
Well, why didn't Wells Fargo just, you know, not answer or confess error or something? Why did it ask for voluntary dismissal?
That I don't know. I do know that the decision was made just to voluntarily dismiss. I do believe that they likely thought that there would just be a stipulation as to that issue, and then it was raised by the defendants that they wanted to recover their attorney's fees, and, you know, a response was filed, and that issue was determined. You know, they did provide itemized fee statements to the district court judge, and he reviewed those extensively. And I think, as you pointed out, you know, he awarded them the fees that he believed were reasonable. And it is important that Rule 41 does not require them to be able to recover any fees. And neither does Cawley, the case that they rely on. You know, subsequent decisions have indicated that it's a may provision. The district court may award what it deems appropriate in connection with a dismissal, and that's what it did. It's not an abuse of discretion.
There has to be a reason. What's the reason?
What's the reason for the district court's...
Drawing the line between the two types of expenditure.
Well, I think that the district court is well within its reason to review attorney's fees and determine what it believes is reasonable. It decided that it was going to award these defendants a certain amount of fees, and they submitted their fees, and it reviewed. Per the appellants, you know, all they had to do was submit fees, right? And then whatever they submitted, the district court just had to accept. I think it's well within the discretion of the district court judge to look at...
I don't understand. So by voluntarily dismissing, and it's a dismissal without prejudice, you're saying, oh, well, we want to continue with this lawsuit, but... Wells Fargo says you want to continue with the lawsuit. We want to continue the lawsuit in some other form. And it's true, the defendant, you've run up all sorts of legal expenses thinking that we were going to be fighting it out here. And you have put us to the expenses of dealing with these issues, and now we're going to have to, and these expenditures we've made are going to be of no value to us in the new litigation, so you've just forced us to waste money by your decision to dismiss and start over in another place. So why shouldn't all those fees be returned? What's the basis for distinguishing between the subject matter jurisdiction fees and the service of process fees?
Well, the district court did review the fees that were submitted, and it asked for itemized fees. What Rule 41 says is that, yes, if a party does decide to voluntarily dismiss, the district court may condition that upon what it deems appropriate. It gives the district court discretion.
Yes, but what is it? But you have to have a reason to exercise discretion. It's not just arbitrary. So what is the reason for distinguishing between the subject matter, the fees relating to, you know, diversity, and the fees relating to service of process? What's the rational distinction between awarding one set of fees and not the other?
I believe what Cawley would say is that you have to award the fees that would not be used again in subsequent litigation. And he reviewed the fee statements that were submitted, and he looked at them, and he determined what he believed the reasonable fees were associated with the subject matter jurisdiction. Now,
but
on the improper service, there was no legal analysis.
But service of process is going to be an issue, and therefore that union's expenditures on, you know, research on service of process will be useful in the California suit? Is that what he said or what he thought? Or
that's not what he said. He said he reviewed the fee statements, and he determined what fees he thought were associated with.
You have to have a reason. Now, what's his reason for distinguishing these two categories of expenditures?
His reason, he didn't address the personal jurisdiction. The service of process, it was not addressed in his decision. What his decision said was he reviewed the attorney's fees that they sought to have. And when
it sounds like a totally arbitrary judgment. Which two identical categories of fees are treated differently for no reason.
He did not have to award anything, and he determined that that's the fees that he was going to award them.
I understand didn't have to award. I don't believe that.
If
you put another lawyer to wait, to a wasted effort, it seems to me you should pay. And if the judge says no, he has to have a reason.
I don't believe that Rule 41 says that you are responsible.
The judges are allowed to do things without a reason.
And his reasoning was is that when he reviewed the fee statements and he looked at what attorney's fees were incurred by them, he looked at the descriptions. He asked them to submit itemized fee statements, and they did. And when he looked at them.
Tell me what the difference is between wasted effort on service of process and wasted effort on diversity.
I don't know that there were any fee statements that identified service of process at all, because it's not a complex issue. Because it's either she got served or she didn't. There wasn't a legal analysis, maybe a paragraph devoted to that in their motion.
So you're saying there were no fees incurred?
I don't know. I don't know that they identified any. What he did is he reviewed the statements himself, and he determined which.
Well, did he say there were no? There's no evidence that that UNAN incurred any fees with regard to service of process?
I don't believe that was in his order.
Well, I don't get it. Sounds completely arbitrary on the judge's part.
I think that he was well within his discretion under Rule 41.
I don't think there's discretion to be arbitrary.
I do think that the case law supports that a district court's review of attorney's fees, a district court's review.
It doesn't make any sense. A judge can't say, well, there's no sense to what I'm doing because I'm giving them fees for one thing and I'm denying them for another and there's no analytical difference between them. But I just feel like doing that today.
I don't think that is at all. I think he looked at the fee statements, he reviewed the time that was spent, and he did it in great detail in his order.
Well, did he think that excessive time had been spent on the service of process issue? Is that what he said?
He thought excessive time had been spent on the brief in general. $50,000 for an 8-page brief, he thought. If you allowed somebody $1,000 per page, which is what, in essence, he ultimately awarded them, was more than sufficient, was more than reasonable.
So he said in his ruling, he didn't rule on the two other issues presented by the motion to dismiss concerning the propriety of service and whether the court lacks personal jurisdiction. Those issues were not ruled on because they could potentially be used in future litigation between the parties in different forums. Wasn't that the language of the court?
Yes, Your Honor.
And then when he specifically looked at the accounting, and I want to know if you quarrel with the court's characterization, I'm going to ask counsel as well. He said that they sought fees for the one motion. It was 90 billable hours for this one motion that included the service issue and included this other issue. That was within the eight or nine pages.
Correct.
And he did a specific breakdown. So is there any, inaccuracy in the way that the district court tried to characterize those hours that you can discern?
No, I can't. I believe he looked at what the fee entries were and determined what he believed would be an appropriate award of fees based upon the level of argument made.
Okay. Well, thank you, Ms. Hatch. So, Mr. Landis?
So why don't you begin there with the language as we're trying to discern the basis for the court's ruling, the language that I quoted in terms of why the court said he didn't get into those issues. And that's at page 6 of his opinion. And also whether you have any quarrel with the way the court characterizes. It says, Sherry seeks attorney's fees for over 90 billable hours researching, drafting, and submitting their entire motion to dismiss. And so, anyway, I'm trying to get ahead.
Well, one point that I'd like to bring, I want to answer you specifically, but I just want to advise the court, this is a claim for in excess of $10 million involving lengthy loan documents.
Oh, I understand the nature of the
And Wells sought, Wells alleged that there was diversity jurisdiction, not on the basis that Judge Hamilton suggested, but they suggested that a special servicer, Oryx, was a citizen of Texas, and that was the basis on which they alleged diversity, and that ultimately was shown in our papers to be completely wrong because the servicer's jurisdiction was not at issue.
Responding to Judge Williams' question, which isn't about that, it's about the two other issues where the judge said the two issues that were not relied on, that were not ruled on by him, relied on facts and legal arguments that could potentially be used in future litigation between the parties in different
Well, I think that that's...
If that's incorrect, then there's a problem with the judge.
It is incorrect because any service of process issue is only going to be fact-specific to that case. It's never going to be something usable in another case. It's one thing to make arguments about what does a document say and was it executed and the like. That would be usable in other litigation. But service of process, it has to be fact-specific. So I think that Your Honor was correct in saying there's really not a reason for excluding the service of process fees.
But then you just had a long discussion with Judge Hamilton on this whole question of California and how the service would be affected there and what provision in the contract applied to it. I assume those kinds of things were looked at for purpose of the, you know, service issue in this case. I understand facts can drive the game, but generally in terms of the law, and you're saying, no, it had nothing to do. This is coming up in the future. It only dealt with Illinois.
It only dealt with that service of process, whether that service of process was valid or not. That would never be something that we could employ that research and facts in any other litigation.
What was the argument that it wasn't a valid service of process?
I believe it had to do with the whether Sherry Yonan or
was delivered or
whether it was
got it or.
I believe whether it was delivered to her, whether it was delivered to
a
boat
issue,
service, something like that. I don't recall the specific details of that.
And what about the personal jurisdiction? That was the other issue.
The minimum contacts issue?
And is that also just that would not recur in California? Or?
Well, no, the minimum contacts issue would only relate. No, that would not. No, that would not. And as I indicated, it would not occur in California. They're citizens of California.
But it could occur in 48 other states.
It's
the legal research would presumably carry over. What would a reasonable fee for the service of process issue be?
Well, I think that the only appropriate way to handle that would be to have a submission be made by the lawyers who prepared that to submit an affidavit asserting what fees they did incur. I couldn't simply say that in answering your question today.
Well, we have no idea what the stakes might be. I've got to say I'm a little troubled by the position, your procedural position here, which seems to suggest that anytime there's a fee petition that's not going to be granted in its entirety, the district judge first has to write an opinion giving advice as to which categories of fees he or she thinks would be appropriate for award, so that people can then go back and reconstruct their billings in light of those principles. That seems like a lot of extra work for district judges.
Well, if the judge is going to when the petition was submitted, we didn't know that he would be awarded, saying, I'm going to award.
You thought it was all or nothing?
No, that in his opinion, that's for the first time where we learned that he was only awarding fees on the issue of subject matter jurisdiction, if it was specifically noted.
If we write an opinion that remands under your theory, nobody's ever going to get Rule 41 fees again in the Seventh Circuit. Okay, it'll turn into a hornet's nest that the district judges are free to deny completely, right? as opposed to saying if you do this, you're going to have to do it twice, and we're going to subject it to exacting scrutiny.
I don't think you should admit that judges are free to deny, to arbitrarily deny fees when the other side has subjected them to expensive, wasted motion.
Mr. Landis, the rule does say on terms that the court considers proper, right? Leaves pretty wide open discretion for the district judge, doesn't it?
It does, but I think Judge Posner's comment is well taken, that we were defending a case for nearly a year and seeking a significant sum of money. A number of complex, very critical issues.
People litigate jurisdiction and venue all the time without.
Yes, sir.
And they win, and then they get sued someplace else, and they start all over again. That happens all the time.
So I'm kind of curious about what all this litigation was going on for the 8 months before, because you didn't submit a fee petition for that.
No, because the rule is that if the litigation can be used in somewhere
right.
else, if the
so
fees...
So theoretically, then, all that litigation going on before, since you didn't ask for fees, could have been used elsewhere,
It theoretically can be
right.
in the future, yes.
And then I didn't pull the original, unfortunately, your original motion for the fees, but I'm wondering, of the 8 pages, how many pages or how many paragraphs related to the service issue or the other issue? Because when you look at what the court says he has difficulty justifying the fees in light of the length of the briefs and the lack of complexity of the issue, and he says the subject matter of the motion was fairly straightforward and did not require extensive legal analysis or complex reasoning to reach the ultimate conclusion. So, like, was it a paragraph on personal jurisdiction or a page on this other thing? I'm trying to get a proportionality thing here, in addition to the problem with keeping the hours. That's a separate issue.
Yes, I can't give you really an answer to that question, but I would say that the issue of diversity jurisdiction did involve a lot of complexity for a variety of reasons. So, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Landis.
Thank you, Judge.